Entrepreneurs always look to the future. We don't worry about the past. We look to the future. The challenge with a lot of CPAs and other tax preparers is that they're historians. They're focused on the past, and they're not willing to take the time to learn how to reduce their clients' taxes.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the show. Sorry about the technical difficulties we had here, but today we're going to talk about taxes. We're going to teach you how to reduce your number one expense and show you how to pay close to nothing in taxes. Our guest today is none other than Tom Wheelwright, who is the author of the books Tax-Free Wealth. I've learned more about this, about taxes and strategies, by reading this book. He's also the tax accountant of Robert Kiyosaki, author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And we told you guys we want to bring some value to outside healthcare. I thought, what other way than teaching how to cut your taxes close to zero and saving more money without having to write more business? With that being said, let me bring him in. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's absolutely fantastic to be on your show.
Thanks so much, Tom. Listen, why don't we start right out with this? You know, I just started reading a book. My mind is blown. I got all these things coming to my mind. And I'm like, how in the hell did I know about this? Not know about this. I'm an entrepreneur. I've owned multiple companies. I've had accountants. And I know nothing about this. Why is that, that so many people don't understand it?
Fundamentally, people are afraid of taxes. They're told it's too complicated. I mean, Albert Einstein said the most complicated thing in the world to understand is income tax. You know, and we're thinking, well, if Albert Einstein can't understand it, how could I possibly understand it? And it's not a whole lot different than the lie Wall Street tells us, which is finance is too complicated. You can't handle your own money. You need to turn it over to us. And so CPAs do the same thing, and they tend to say, look, it's too complicated. Just let us handle it. Don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. But the problem is that the tax law is really fundamentally a series of incentives. It's a way to reduce your taxes. And if you don't understand what you need to do, you're always going to be paying too much tax.
So talk to me for a second about the tax laws. You know, I saw you on another show. And this is where I found out about you on another podcast. And I said, you started talking about the tax code. And you said, listen, the tax code really isn't written to tax us. 95% of the tax code is not. Talk about that for a minute. I mean, because everybody thinks it's scared to death of the IRS. And seeing that show blew my mind.
Well, it's pretty easy. When you think about it, this last big CARES Act, right, which is the big stimulus package, all you're reading about is how the millionaires, you know, all the rich people have got these big tax breaks in that act, right? Well, the reality is there's only one line in the entire tax law that raises money, and it just says all income's taxable unless we say it isn't. And then there's another line that says nothing's deductible unless we say it is. And then there's 99.8% is just an instruction guide to reduce your taxes. Look, I mean, for example, okay, your real estate. Let's say the government wants to increase employment. What does it do? It encourages entrepreneurs to hire more people. Look at the $1,200 checks that people are getting. Those are tax credits. That's what those are. They're a prepayment of a tax credit. So the government uses the tax law for its stimulus packages. Well, it's been doing that for many, many, many years, and people just don't understand that there's literally thousands of tax benefits, and most people never take advantage of them.
Well, I didn't even recognize that, and I bet you most people don't understand that. That's just going to be a tax credit. It's not a check. But yeah, I mean, you see entrepreneurs, you know, I guess the rich people have understand this. They got good tax strategists like yourself, and right. You understand how the law works. Why is it that we go to these accountants, and again, I'm an entrepreneur. Many of everybody on here listening are entrepreneurs and own multiple businesses. Why is it that our CPA is not telling us this?
Because they don't understand it. That's the challenge. Most CPAs are scared to death of the IRS. And I got to tell you, I've been doing this business for 40 years, and I've not run up against an IRS auditor that I was particularly concerned about. I mean, they're doing a hard job. They're trying to do their job. But let me tell you, if your CPA is afraid of the IRS, then you probably need a new CPA.
And what makes it the difference? Is there a CPA a tax strategist, can there be both, or is it you have one of each?
No, the best tax strategists are CPAs, because you've got to understand the math, right? You've got to understand business, and that's a CPA. The difference is that a CPA could also be somebody that just runs numbers. They could be somebody who just does bookkeeping. So the key is to find a CPA who looks at taxes the way you want to look at taxes. So for example, I look at taxes as a very positive thing. Okay, this is an opportunity to increase my wealth by reducing my taxes, because that's the way the tax law works. But that's something I've studied over many, many years and just figured out. I'll never forget one of the first times I'm on stage with Robert Kiyosaki, and we're actually in Las Vegas. And I get up on stage and he says, so tell us about taxes. And I said, well, you know, taxes are fundamentally a series of incentives for business owners and investors. And he looks at me like, what? And the light bulb went on. And since then, he takes me all over the world with him, because once you get the basic principle that the tax law is not there to punish you unless you're an employee, it does punish employees, but it's there to reward you for doing what the government wants to do. As long as you partner with the government and do what the government wants, you're going to pay less taxes.
Well, and that's an interesting point in the book, is talk about that for a second, because you said the entrepreneurs and the investors get all the breaks. Give me some examples as to what entrepreneurs and investors can do out there to beat the tax code, and what the government is trying to get you to do.
Yeah, so first of all, we're not beating the tax code, we're following the tax code. And that's a big distinction, because a lot of tax preparers and so-called tax planners, they want to beat the tax code. I don't want to beat the tax code, I want to follow the tax code, okay? And so let's take an example. Let's say that the government, let's say that they want to clean up the environment. And they say, look, if you buy an electric car, we're going to give you a tax credit. I'm sure a lot of people on this call own a Tesla, or own an i8 or something like that, right? Well, guess what? That's just an incentive with the government saying, we want more electric cars, so we're going to give you a tax credit if you buy an electric car. Another one would be, okay, we want to drill more oil. We want to be energy independent. So we're going to give huge tax benefits to people who take the risk and drill for oil. Or we want to develop real estate. Great, we're going to give huge tax benefits to real estate, people who invest in real estate. The key is, anything that you do that is really there to increase your wealth and to increase employment and to increase investment will give you a tax break. Anything that you do that is just to consume is going to cost you taxes. Produce tax breaks, consumers pay taxes.
So if I'm hearing you right, the government's basically saying, the way I see it is, like, you look at the things like Amazon, and they're saying, listen, instead of us having to fix up this area, we're going to give you a tax break if you build in the area, you create employment, tax dollars, you fix the area, we're not taking a risk. And if you do that, we'll give you a tax break.
Right, because, look, the government knows that they're not very good at those things, right? I mean, you've seen government housing. It's not pretty. So what the government says is, look, we'll give you a tax benefit to go in and redevelop a difficult area. We call those opportunity zones, okay? And we're going to give you this big tax benefit, and basically we're going to share the risk with you. So all the government's doing is sharing the risk. Think of it this way. The government is your partner. You can have a good partner or a bad partner. You can be a good partner or a bad partner. What's going on is that if you're an employee or you're paying high taxes, it's because you're not doing what the government wants you to do, okay? Maybe because you don't understand, right? But if you do what the government wants you to do, you don't have to beat the tax code. You just have to follow the tax code.
I love in the book when you talk about real estate. You know, I never really looked at it much. You think the stock market, and Robert Kiyosaki talks about, you know, the typical employee, get a salary, put it in a 401k, and you're going to make money in a stock market long term. And you never think about real estate, and you start reading about the tax advantages. Can you just briefly talk to the entrepreneurs on here at the type of tax benefits that you can get having real estate investments?
You could literally put $20,000 down and borrow $80,000. So you put in $20,000. Let's say you buy a rental, just a duplex, right? A little duplex for $100,000. You put down $20,000. You could literally get a deduction of up to $25,000 to $30,000 the first year. So you put in 20 and get a deduction for 25. Now, I don't know many places you can get a better tax benefit than that.
And that's what you call the depreciation, being able to depreciate the investment asset over time. Is that what you're talking about?
Right. So what we have now is we have what's called bonus depreciation. And bonus depreciation says that, look, you when you buy a property, you basically buy four things. You buy the land, which doesn't wear out, the building, which wears out over a very long time, and then you also buy the contents of the building and you buy the land improvements, things like covered parking and things like outdoor lighting, landscaping. Well, that stuff wears out. That stuff doesn't last forever. Well, those last two things, the contents and the land improvements, those are deductible the year you buy the property. And it doesn't matter whether you put the money in or the bank, you get all the deduction.
And these type of things, they're only available to business owners, right?
If you're taking the risk and you're investing directly, the difference is that you invest in the stock market, somebody else is getting those tax benefits. The company that you invest in is getting those tax benefits because you're basically buying a derivative. A stock is just a derivative, right? You don't own the business. You own paper that represents the business, but the business itself gets those tax benefits. But the problem is that if you own, if all your investments are in paper assets, the best you can do is not pay tax now or not pay tax on the income, but you'll never reduce your other tax. You'll never be able to reduce your wages, you know, outside of the deferral that comes from an IRA or something like that. It's just that the tax benefits are so much better if you're a business owner or investor, because that's what the government wants you to do. That's what they're encouraging.
And again, CPAs, they're not telling you about this because, again, I never heard of it until I started reading these books. It almost is like a lot of them says, listen, I'm going to do a return. It's worth X amount of dollars. And now I got to figure out how do I get 300 people's return and I make $200,000. Is that kind of the mindset of the historians?
Yeah, pretty much. So, and that is that, you know, you make a good point. That's the right word for them. They're historians. So what we decided to do years and years ago in our, you know, I started my first CPA from 25 years ago. What I want to do right from the beginning is I didn't want to focus on the past. I wanted to focus on the future. I'm a bit of a dreamer. You know, I'm an entrepreneur by nature. Grew up in a family of entrepreneurs. My grandfather, great-grandfather, all entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs always look to the future. We don't worry about the past. We look to the future, right? And so I want to look to the future for my clients. And I want to focus on how do we reduce your taxes in the future? How do we help you build your wealth? How do we help you build your business? The challenge with a lot, not all of them, but the challenge with a lot of CPAs and other tax preparers is that they're just too, they're historians. They're focused on the past and they don't understand and they're not willing to take the time to learn how to reduce their clients' taxes.
Hey, Tom, this is Craig. Quick question on real estate. You know, I live in Southern California. I was laughing at your duplex for $100,000. I can't get a garage in Laguna Beach for $100,000. So, you know, our listeners are all over the country. So can you compare and contrast or maybe give us some ideas, rules of thumbs to consider if you have the money to do it yourself versus participating in some sort of investment, maybe sometimes sponsored by or put on in a private placement by your accounting firm or other individuals? What are the things they should look out for when they're considering? They say, hey, I don't have enough money to go out and do this, but can I participate in real estate in more of a passive way?
I think the amount of money you have is not a relevant consideration because you can live in California and still buy property in Indiana. I don't think that's the big issue. I think the big issue is there are differences in tax consequences between being a passive investor and being a professional investor. And if you take the time to become a professional investor, A, you're a better investor and you have less risk, you make more money, and you do get more tax benefits. However, that said, one of the big fallacies, a myth that I hear, and I was talking to a CPA the other day partner in a CPA firm, and he said, look, we don't do these cost segregations. We don't do bonus depreciation because we know that our investors aren't going to get the tax benefit because they're passive investors. And I chided him and I said, look, I said, that may be true for you, but our CPAs, and we have a network of 35 CPA firms across the country, our CPAs, they understand how to set up your situation as an investor so you can take those tax benefits, whether you're a professional or a passive investor. So you can always get the tax benefits if you have the right CPA, if you have the right strategist. But syndications are, you know, I mean, if you don't have the time, which is a big issue, and you're an accredited investor, then a syndication might be the right way to go for you. I mean, we have lots of clients that either they put on syndications or they're invested in syndications.
Yeah, the syndications are an interesting topic. And I realized you could basically, just by the depreciation factor, you know, earn revenue without even a cash flow on it. But let's jump back real quick. You'd mentioned audits and deductions. Tell me, what are some of the things that maybe entrepreneurs are not deducting that they can deduct? And everybody's afraid to get audited. I know having an S-Corp versus an LLC reduces my audit. So if you could talk a little bit about some strategies around that, be great.
Sure. So the first one that always comes to mind is the one that people miss the most. And typically they miss this because their CPA told them not to take it. And that's a home office deduction. And most entrepreneurs I know work, you know, primarily, I mean, everybody's working from their home now, right? So most of them do spend a lot of time working from their house. Here's the thing, when you have a home office, which by the way, is a specific deduction in the Internal Revenue Code, we're not being aggressive here. We're taking what's given to us by the law. Not only do we get a deduction for part of our home, we also get to increase the amount of deduction for our car. Because instead of having a commute to the first, like our first client or our first property that we go to, that kind of commute is non-deductible and the commute home is non-deductible. But if we have a commute from our kitchen to our home office, that's a non-deductible 30 feet. And that's literally the way the IRS looks at it. So you could have massively increased deductions for your car as well as get deductions for your home simply by doing home office. And when I hear people say, yeah, but that raises a red flag, it goes to your point. And that is, yeah, if you're a Schedule C, you know, if you're a sole proprietor, but if your tax is an S corporation, there's actually nowhere to report your home office as a home office on your S corporation tax return. It's just an office expense like any other office expense.
So basically what happened, if I'm hearing you right, if I stop at my home office in the morning and then I drive to my other office, and then at night when I come back, I stop at my office before I go back into my kitchen, I now can deduct my travel to my office back and forth every day.
Yeah. Now, let's be clear. There are details. Okay. So you have to make sure that you pay attention to the details. There are certain things you're going to do at your home office and different things you're going to do at the other office. But you can technically have two offices. Okay. Let me give you an example. I'll just give you me as an example. Okay. So I do all of my, you know, what I call work from my home. And I have for years and years. I haven't gone into the office to, you know, review a tax return or talk on the phone with a client for many, many years. However, I do go into the office in order to meet with staff. If a client comes to town, I'll go into the office to meet with the client. So the office that's away from my home, I'm using for a very specific purpose. And the office in my home, I'm using for a very different purpose. And that's important. And it's also important to make sure that you follow all the details and all the rules, because, you know, you can see that people could abuse this. And so the IRS is always concerned about abuse, which they should be. But fundamentally, you're absolutely correct. I mean, fundamentally, the concept is correct. You get to deduct that travel back and forth. If you set it up right, you should have no problem with that.
Yeah. I mean, somebody like me, I literally do work every day from home. And sometimes when I get back at night or laying in bed, so on and so forth. But it's an interesting one. Talk to me a little bit about preservation of wealth and kind of protecting wealth in these assets once you start to develop them.
So here's the thing. As you build wealth, you're going to be a target. And so we always call it, we say you have to protect it from pirates and predators and politicians. And protecting it from politicians, that means that you're not giving it all to the government in form of taxes, right? There are lots of pirates and predators out there. People see that you're making money and they're going to sue you. They actually, in the rest of the world, they call this the great U.S. disease. It's a U.S. disease is what they call it. All of these lawsuits. So you do have to protect yourself. You can't be a sole proprietor. You can't own things in your own name. You can control everything without owning anything. So you don't put it in your name. For example, when we do a tax strategy for a client, we'll spend 3 to 6 months with them and we'll come up with all the ways that they can save taxes. And then at the same time, we'll come up with, okay, so what do you need to do to reduce the chances of somebody being able to attack you and come get your assets, right? Because they're going to want to. And what you have to remember is that nothing is bulletproof. But then if you and I are out in the woods and a bear comes chasing us, I don't have to outrun the bear. I only have to outrun you. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to outrun those who have not been so diligent and let the lawyers go after those guys and leave us alone.
So basically, control everything and own nothing, right?
There you go. There you go.
So it's interesting about lawsuits. I've been in just owning businesses. They just come. And anytime I've been in one, I call up my clients and they're like, yeah, they have a million stories. I think the number is the U.S. makes up 4% of the world's population, but 93% of lawsuits. So guys, if you're not protected and keeping a strategy around that, you're going to have some problems. What are your thoughts on, you know, financial advisors giving advice and going to them? I mean, they're never talking about taxes. Mostly it's the market, never heard about real estate. You know, how do you build that team so they all work together? Because I got to imagine you got to have one of those as well.
Well, that's really been pointed out in this crisis that we're in, is that people are succeeding in this crisis. A lot of it's based on who they know, not what they know. So you're right. Building that team is important. Let's start with financial advisors. Can they be useful? Absolutely. Most of the time, they're lying to you. They ask you the question, how much do you need to retire? And I always, if somebody asks me that, I always say, so what? What do you mean how much I need? You mean so I don't live under a bench? What are you talking about here? And then they want to talk about diversification. Well, here's the problem with diversification. Nobody ever made money diversifying. The whole point of diversification is to not lose money. It's not to make money. It's to not lose money. So, you know, when you're building your wealth, diversifying is not what you want to do. And financial advisors don't know anything other than diversifying. The people I think you need on your team, first of all, you have to be on your team. You have to really be paying attention. The second person I think is your bookkeeper. If you don't have good records, you're never going to be able to make good decisions, ever. You're not going to have good numbers. You can't make good decisions. The third person, of course, is your CPA. It's just critical in kind of bringing everything together and helping you reduce your taxes. Then, of course, you have to have an attorney. Like you said, you have to have an attorney who's going to help you protect your assets. And I think what's really been pointed out in this CARES Act is that you need to have a banker. I mean, that's been my big lesson, is that you've got to have a really close relationship with the banker. Those people who have good relationships with bankers, they already have their PPP money. Those who didn't, they don't have their money yet. And some of them won't ever get it because they don't have a relationship with the banker. So building this team, it's really about, you know, get some referrals, read some books, you know, figure out what type of people you want. But really do it strategically. Don't just do it haphazard. I mean, know who you want, what you want, and what type of people you want on your team.
That's all great advice. A couple of in the weeds questions. Are there any creative ways to get around the $10,000 limitation on mortgage interest and what is it, state income tax and that cap?
Well, if you really want to, if you have a corporation, corporations are not subject to that limitation. That's an individual limitation. So if you're paying taxes, your state taxes through your corporation, they're deductible. You know, if you want to do that, you can do that. People ask me, how is this deductible? Is this expense deductible? And it's the wrong question. The better question is, how do I make it deductible? I was in Santiago, Chile, a few years ago with Kiyosaki. And we get on stage and he turns to me, he says, how do you deduct a Bentley? And the Bentley dealer was the sponsor of the event. And so I go through the normal things of how we would deduct a Bentley in the U.S., right? At lunch, this tax attorney comes up to me from Santiago and he says, by the way, Tom, that's great, but we can't do that here because guess what? That's a luxury and we don't get to deduct cars in Chile. I said, oh, that's interesting. So I'm telling Robert about that the next morning. And he says, right before we get up to speak, he says, okay, Tom, I want you to teach them how to deduct a Bentley in Chile. And so I go, okay, I've learned. You always say yes, right? And sure enough, we got up and we're explaining how to deduct a Bentley in Chile. And later that day, the same tax attorney came up to me and said, that was unbelievable, Tom. I never would have thought of doing it that way. And you could absolutely do what you're saying. So you just never know. You just say yes, say we'll figure it out.
Sounds like a five-star chef, huh, John? Yeah.
It's good advice. Guys, as we close out here, why don't you put some questions below? We'll get Tom to answer before he's got to jump. Tom, how do we go about choosing a tax advisor now, right? A lot of listeners are on here. I was lucky enough to read your book. And a lot of listeners on here is probably using a CPA. How do they go about finding and choosing a tax advisor?
Well, I'll give you two simple ways. First of all, in chapter 23 of my book, Tax-Free Wealth, is a whole chapter on how to choose the right tax advisor. So read that chapter. That would be one way. The other way I would say is, I can give you an easy button. We have 35 CPA firms across the country that I train on a weekly basis. And you really want the easy button, just call us at Wealthability, and we're happy to line you up with somebody who knows what they're talking about.
So where do we find you? Wealthability.com?
Wealthability.com. It's the easiest way. Just get on there, schedule a call. We're happy to help any way we can.
All right, excellent. Let's take a couple questions here. I know one that came in was, what do we do with our company car? Is that in my name? Is that in the company's name? How do we structure that?
I have a favorite way to do that. And typically what I do is I buy the car in my personal name, and then I assign it to the company. And I do that for only one reason. And that is because personal auto insurance is like half the price of commercial auto insurance. And so if you buy it in your name and assign it to the company, you're still covered. Yeah, and you should talk to your insurance agent about that. But you don't pay those high commercial prices. So you do need to transfer it to the company, but I always buy it in my name just to get the cheaper insurance. CPA stands for cheapest people in America, so we're always looking for ways to reduce our expenses.
I love it. That's kind of a takeaway here. We got the delay of a tax day here. They're going to be coming up and calling. I'm sure a lot of people are going to be calling their CPA this week. Good luck getting them on the phone with what's going on. But what questions should they now be asking their CPA that maybe he's been asleep at the wheel?
So here's the big question. How do I reduce my taxes between now and July 15th? That would be my number one question. What do I have to do so that on July 15th, I don't owe a huge tax bill? Remember, people aren't just deferring their 2019 tax returns. They get to defer both their April 15th and their June 15th estimated payments to July 15th. So what I'd be asking is, what do I do in the next 3 months to reduce my taxes so I don't have a big tax bill on July 15th. That's what I'd be wanting to know.
S-Corp or LLC, a lot of the listeners are, insurance consultants. They're running whether it be a two-person, five-person, 20, 50-person firm. Where should we be?
So for tax purposes, you should be an S-Corp. For legal purposes, it depends on your state. So if you're in California, you're going to be a corporation. If you're in most states, you're going to be an LLC, a limited liability company that's taxed as an S corporation. But in any case, you're going to want to be taxed as an S corporation because that way you can manage your self-employment tax, your Social Security taxes. If you're a sole proprietor, then you just pay Social Security taxes on 100% of your income. And you really don't want to have to do that.
Yeah, I just changed both of my companies over in S Corp. I'm just shaking my head thinking, God, how many years did I overpay on self-employment tax? It's mind-boggling that this happens. But if I just look at my audience here, we're insurance advisors, I'd like to call us, and a lot of the employers depend on us, and a lot of them out there are like CPAs. They're just brokers They're not coming up with strategies. Here's your five fully insured carriers that's available to you. And a lot of our listeners are converting over to that advisor like a tax strategist, like we talked about at High Stakes Advising. I it was right before I read your book, and I said, I gave the example of being a tax strategist. That's who we are, guys, and you got to learn to convert to that. So listen, Tom, I want to thank you so much for joining us. It was really helpful. I know my phone and email is going to be ringing off the hook to find out more about you. But guys listening here, pick up Tom's book, Tax-Free Wealth. Pick it up on Amazon. And if you have questions on taxes, like Tom said, he trains 35 companies around the country that follow his strategies. Reach out to him at WealthAbility. Tom, thanks again so much for joining us. And guys, we will see you on the next one. Take care.